Our speaker is a young man that I've had the pleasure to personally work with going through the process. He's someone that, in my opinion, lives the principles of this program to the best of his ability. Please join me now in welcoming Frank Ness to the podium.
So my name is Frank S. I'm an alcoholic.
Frank.
Holy shit, you're all out there. So, you know, I've had the pleasure of walking out on a couple places in my life that where you couldn't show any bit of fear. And right here, this is kind of hard to compose myself. The sweat's already starting to come. So everybody, I always hear the story starts out when they first took the drink. Well, I think my actual story started when my mother conceived me, which, to make a short of that one, it's my biological father is my mother's foster father. So chew on that for a little bit. And so I get adopted at 4 years old by a gentleman that I automatically can't stand because I just don't know any better. I just think that he's not my dad and da-da-da-da-da. I start to drink at 9 years old. I hung around a 24-year-old kid from the shop. My dad had a shop, and I was always there. So everybody around the shop, they were all grown men, grown-ass men that partied and drank and cussed and fought right there in the shop. And so seeing that my whole life, when I had an opportunity to drink with one of them, I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And I went home that night after hanging out with him, and there was no repercussions. I was caught right away, right when I walked in the house. My mom knew what was up, but she just sent me to my room and really got in no trouble. So I don't know if that had an effect, or it must have had some effect, because I thought I could get away with it. So I continued to keep on drinking. When I started tonight, right before I came in here, I was like, okay, all I got to do is tell the truth and do it in chronological order. So that's what I had to remind myself right now, to tell the truth, because I used to say slightly embellished for better picture quality before I'd ever say anything. And so I get my first drink, my first arrest, and then I go on through, and every year I get arrested. Every year I'm drinking, every year I'm getting arrested. I get my first stabbing at 14 and a half. I had an altercation with a gentleman, and he lost, clearly. And but I also was, prior to that, in between all the drinking and stuff, I was in the Civil Air Patrol. It's like a little auxiliary of the Air Force. So I was pretty much mama's boy. And but I had high ambitions of going into the military. So this all goes down. I'm running with the recruiter every day. I'm doing bivouacs with the recruiters. I'm the poster boy for going in. Once this all happens, they deem me mentally unstable. So at that point in my life, I used that, plus all the other stuff that I had put the stigma on me, on myself, as my excuse. And it dictated me all the rest of my life. If there was a situation that arose and it calls for getting a little crazy, I went above and beyond because I wanted the recognition. I wanted everybody to know that I was willing to do whatever it took to be the dumbest son of a gun out there. And it was because of my insecurity. Looking back now, I see this. But at the time, I didn't see it. I just thought I was just that way. So I go through all the court dealings. We go through the diagnosis through psychiatrists and whatnot, hypnotherapists, you name it. We did it because you're only allowed to give undue force. So if somebody gives you a certain amount of force, you're only allowed to give that same amount of force back. Well, I went above and beyond. So we get done with this. I'm no longer in school. They politely asked me not to come back to the school. So I'm no longer getting an education. I'm just kind of working at the shop with my dad. I'm doing independent study, making it through. I'm doing grown man work. So of course I get the idea that I'm a grown man when I'm just a child. I constantly fight with my dad. We had numerous knife fights in the kitchen. He happened to be an airborne, so he was very good at that. And I brought my own rag this time.
Oh, really?
Yes. So.
It looked like you were using it.
I'm waiting until I get a good glistening shine. So, him and I are constantly arguing, constantly fighting. At that time, of going through that with my mother, she was a manipulator by fear, guilt, or obligation. She was brutally violent towards everybody in the house, verbally, emotionally, psychologically. Say that word backwards. And so I subsequently ended up hating women. And I mean, I was a male chauvinist pig where I hated women. I thought it was my job to step on the neck of every woman I came across so that they would never revolt against me and get over on me. I didn't know this at the time. I just thought it was cool, really. And so I have a string of relationships that I was verbally abusive. I would get in their mind and screw with them and just all kinds of weird, twisted stuff. I had no respect for women, which led me to, you know, more hiding it from myself, more drinking. I drank all the time. I don't think I ever got the physical problems that I've heard stories in here because, well, to be quite honest, from 18, I spent every birthday locked up except for two of them. 18 to 33, they were locked up, one form or another. So those were always breaks. So I just never had time to do the damage. I would go out like a dog off the leash. As soon as the leash was let go, I was gone. I was pissing on everything, and then I'd get put back in my cage. But so I dislike women. I'm making a mess of my life. I'm getting arrested all the time. I got no respect for nobody. That goes all the way from 18 to like 33. I mean, I just did whatever. I was with the woman for 20 years, and 7 of that, we weren't married. And that woman took so much abuse from me. She was nuts. The amount that I put that woman through, I could not comprehend. It's just, now that I look back over it and seeing what I've done to her and every other girl, it's crazy. I mean, and there's a reason why I changed, and I'll get to that. So we're not married. I'll do what I want, when I want, how I want. There ain't nothing you can say. That was my conversation with her anytime there was a problem. There ain't no ring on my finger. I'll do what I want. So I had no respect for anybody. I was working full-time whenever I would show up to work. Going in and out, in and out, in and out. And everybody gave me something I never got, I guess. It was like the recognition, either it was the fear of what I would do on a stupid moment, because I was willing to do anything to get some kind of attention, I guess. So, 33, I've got long history, probation officer, everybody knows me. Well, my dad offers me a shot at the shop, and I jump on it, and we buy some property because we're going to move me out to the woods where I can have my little area, because I do best when I go camping. So now I'm working full-time. We get off work, we go home, we develop this property, and it's just marvelous property. It's unbelievable. It's raw. I'm learning all kinds of stuff with my dad. I got drugs in my story too, by the way. So I've switched from drinking to other drugs because I didn't go to jail as frequently, to be quite honest with you. I would do stupid things like put a bottle of Jack Daniels in a beer bong on a bet that I wouldn't throw up and just end up in Inglewood flat on my back somehow. End up in front of the fire department cutting the hose in half with a hacksaw blade just to do it. It wasn't even quality dumbass things, you know what I mean? And so we're developing the property. I'm going to have my first kid. I'm 33. And the pressure gets to me. I mean, I'm working. Everything is just coming crashing down. The baby's getting closer. My ex-wife sees I'm using all day, drinking from the front of the gate. It was 4.5 miles to the house. I would drink like a fish to calm down, to try to mingle back into my family that I was trying to fake the part over there. Well, 7 months, she's had enough. She sees I'm going nowhere. I'm not changing. Same old Frank, same old shit, same old day. And she's going to leave. Well, you know, that didn't work out well for me, her, or every, or the neighbors for that matter. So she goes to leave, and we had dug a pit for the septic tank, and it turned into a screaming session. We were on the front porch. We're pushing each other. I'm probably being more aggressive than I'm going to lead on. And she falls. Well, when she gets up, something clicks in my head about the baby. I remember thinking about it for a split second, but that was enough for her to not, there was no talking to her. So she went up to my family's house and got them involved. I naturally went up there because, you know, I've been terrorizing my family since I was a kid. I might as well continue on, I think, huh? So, ends up, Mom hits me with a baseball bat. I've got Dad pinned up against the wall. I'm losing my mind because I'm seeing that everything's coming to an end. The neighbors come down to stop. Before the neighbors came down, I actually poured gasoline over me, my dad, everybody that was there. And then the neighbors come down. I poured gasoline on them. And then I walked them all down to the pit. I was armed at the time, so they really had no reason for not going with me. I got ready to light them up. Everybody, all of us, really. I was at that point where you just don't care. And so I pulled the lighter out. Out of nowhere, a drop of water comes. Well, believe it or not, and I kind of, kind of reality sets in, like, what the hell am I doing? And fear and everything else. So I back up, I walk away from the pit, and naturally they all get out and go all their ways. Well, I load up, I get on the quad, and I grab all my guns, everything, my backpacking gear. My solution is I'm going to go to the woods and live out in the mountains, because I'm on parole at the time, so I know that parole officer is going to somehow find out about this, right? Well, next morning, they all go down and fill out their little paperwork saying what happens, and they all are the same. So they got me in custody because, I mean, my dad had come out. My ex-wife, she came back and played the part to talk me down and talk me back into it, and I turned myself in and da-da-da-da-da. So I'm in jail. Just like any other time I've been to jail, and I've always taken my crimes. Like, I might be nervous about it, but right when I get in front of the judge, I always look at it like, I did this. Regardless of what it is, I did it, so I'm going to take my punishment, I'm going to get my punishment, I'm going to get out, and I'm going to look you in the face and not give a shit about it, to be honest with you, because I'm going to say I paid my dues. I did that. That's what I did. And I got that recognition. Everybody thought I was, don't fuck with Frank, he's crazy, he gets stupid. That was something I wanted from everybody my whole life. I wanted that. I wanted that attention. I wanted that power, or whatever it was. So I'm in jail. I'm looking at the time. My buddy got 4 years for pouring gasoline on his car. Just his car. And I was thinking, well, shit, if I poured it on 8 people. I was doing the math, and I was like, oh, shit. So they had me in my cell, and I remember I looked around, and I was waiting for a cell to come in, and I broke it down. I was just like, okay, God, I've never asked you for anything, and whatever you're going to give me, just make it acceptable in my head, because I wasn't really thinking I would get nothing. I just thought, just make it acceptable for me to understand it and to accept it, because the freest I've ever seen a man was this cat on this on a 3-yard. He had life, like 3 or 4 of them, and he was the happiest dude I ever seen in my life, and I couldn't understand it at the time, but now I was thinking, I just want that soundness of mind for wherever I go. I was content with doing it. I just wanted to be okay with it in my head. So I make this little plea. I don't feel nothing. Get a visit from my ex-wife, because she's that dumb. She comes back to me. I'm thinking in my head, but there's just a show of compassion that I have no understanding still. To this day, I still think, what is she must be crazy. Well, she comes in, she visits me, and she looks at me, and I guess my skin color was like green. And she's all, you're green. And I was like, I couldn't see myself because, you know, we've got those great mirrors and all. But I took it for that something was happening. I go to court. I stand up proudly. I'm waiting for my time. I'm thinking this is going to be a grip of time. And they start chanting some words, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, because you're sitting there just kind of watching everything. And I heard DA's not going to file. And I thought to myself, no, 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 hell no. I'm not coming back in 2 weeks or nothing. So I asked him. I said, no, I'll tell my lawyer. I said, no, no, get that shit. Get him back. I want to know what's going on. Why aren't they filing? He's like, they're not filing. So I go into this program. Don't ask me how. I think it's the only thing I could come up with. It was this divine intervention. And at the time, prior to that, I had walked with God, but never asked him to do anything, and I never wanted him to ask me to do anything. I just wanted to believe him. I had reverence mentally, but nothing. There's no actions. My parents, my mom was a disfellowed Jehovah's Witness, so she hated religion. My dad was old school Catholic, so he hated religion, so it was never put on us. So, but I was scared. So I was like, yeah, I'll try this God thing out. Well, I go into STP, and it's a program in the jail when they first came out, and they were extensive. It was 24-hour lockdown. You came out for your groups, and you got maybe some day room time, and that was about it. For 10 months straight, I did this. It was the first time I took the medication that they've been trying to get me to take since I was 15. And I finally said, man, I'll do whatever. I'll do whatever. You know, I mean, this guy's giving me love. This is an opportunity. I had never heard about belief systems. I didn't know about cultures having an effect on us, how the mind works, synapse, all kind. Just ignorant of everything that my belief in women dictated how my relationships all went. I just didn't understand it. It was all foreign to me. But I sat there for 10 months and soaked it up. I just soaked it up. I mean, I was the dork that wanted to know everything. And in between that time, I read book after book after book. And I read this book. It was Manipulation by Fear, Guilt, and Obligation. I read it so that nobody in there could manipulate me. And I found myself in there. And when I found myself in there, I realized that everything I'd ever done and gotten in my life was simply me throwing a fucking tantrum to get what I wanted. One way, I was either intimidating you physically or manipulating you through somebody else, or I was just a child. And that was, I guess, the beginning of some humility. So I get out, 10 month one day, they bring me back to court, they ask me, and I spewed off the same stuff. Oh, believe da 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 da. They let me out. So being fresh, I'm a good resolve when I get out of a jail or when I get a cut a break. I got dedication, I'm going to do this. So I started to go to I was working in the oil fields at the time. We had had our first baby. I swear I don't think I was there for the second one, but the second one was conceived. And I'm being facetious on that. I mean, they just came so back to back, it seemed. And that's something to be aware of. If you see one come, there's another one following. So now we got two kids. I'm scared straight. I ain't playing around. I ain't doing nothing. I'm just going to work in the morning. I've had my wife take over everything. No responsibilities because I'm afraid of taking on any pressure. I just gotta stay sober. I'm going to meetings, but I'm not taking part in anything. I'm coming in. I'm grabbing the wall. I'm walking out of here feeling like I'm cured. I'm good. I got a little fix. I didn't have to talk to nobody. I didn't really get close to anybody. I'm okay. And that went on for quite a bit of time, and then she had been harping on me to go get this job at the school. You gotta go apply at the job, and we lived right across the street from the main office. And I'd just look at her and think, how dumb are you? Don't you see my record? I mean, do you see this? So I walk over one day just to shut her up, really. And the guy behind the desk, I said, well, here's my C file, and I laid it out there. So this is everything I've done. And he looks at me, because I don't know it, but he's been there, and he's like, you got your C-file on you? And I'm like, well, yeah, you gotta have this where you go. And he goes, he's looking through it all. He goes, well, your last felony ends up, your five-year mark will be in 8 months. I'm like, yeah. He goes, we can't hire you until you got 5 years from your last felony. And I said, oh, okay. So I walk out of there. I'm thinking, this dude ain't hiring me. He's just playing the game, you know, pacify me, get me out the door. Well, in that 8 months, I go over once a month, and I tell them, I'm still working in the oil field, I'm doing this, I'm just checking in with you. So it goes on. 8 months, one day I show up. I said, 8 months is over, man. Is that offer still on the table? And he put me to work that day. So 2 years of subbing. I'm doing everything right. I'm grateful. I mean, I'm grateful. And I'm grateful for every minute. You can come at me with the biggest bullshit. I'm doing meditations. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. And it didn't bother me. I was grateful. I mean, the car broke down. I was like, yes, the sun's shining. So it was just, there was no way of getting me down. I was afraid to get down. Well, that goes on for a while. And, you know, life happens and ex-wife gets hurt. And, well, I finally get hired for the school. We buy a house. I got two kids. I got the boat. I got the trailer. I'm living in my own house. Life's great. I don't go to meetings anymore. Life's greater. I don't have to spend the time down here. Oh, it's even greater. So that goes on for a little while. She gets hurt. I start to compensate for working the two jobs, get resentful, start arguing around the house. The kids are getting, the tension's growing, everything's going bad. Well, second year of me trying to cover everything. Now she's got back problems, so she's taking, you know, the normal Vicodins, Norcos to the excess and drinking the beer and, you know, catching her dancing during the day, but she can't go back to work, and I'm starting to get resentful for it, you know, this and that. And so I come to her and I tell her, if you can't go back to work to keep the schedule going the way it is, I'm going to have to go back to doing extracurricular activities. And she doesn't seem to bother, because I guess she's got the same memory as I do, that I might be able to do it this time and it won't go back to the same rocky road that we had. So that goes on for approximately about a month and a half, and that comes to a quick halt because my whole demeanor changes. I turn into a hateful individual. Hateful. And I'm promptly asked to leave. I'm under the influence, so I automatically leave because I don't want to get in any trouble. Well, I come back 3 days later, and by this time she's already tied one on, so I'm sober and she's drinking and she's threatening me with the cops. Ends up calling them. Well, they escort her to her family's. That made her so mad that she got even. So, needless to say, she came back later on and got me out. I ended up moving into the school in the boiler room and sleeping on the gym roof, cooking breakfasts in the home ec department, taking showers in the locker room, and continuing on with my disease. At first it was fun, but then it, you know, eventually that cush job that takes an act of Congress to lose almost because the union, I found a way through that, and they asked me to politely leave. So then I go into a four-year pit. I'm shacked up in a motel room with a girl that gets more girls than I do, which I found that. So our relationships were rather crowded sometimes, but it was perfect for my misery. I was on my road to death, and what better way to go? So I fed that for 4 years. I wouldn't get a job because I didn't want to pay for anything. 4 years I couldn't see my kids every time I showed up. There was an altercation. I was in the influence. All these are the... Oh, that's a lot about what I did wrong. I'm gonna make it. So, I forgot to tell you, in between all this time that's going on, I'd go to, like, the rescue mission for 6 months, you know, get a sentence to there and do that. Or I'd be in... Salvation Army down in Carpinteria, complete that program, attending meetings, I didn't see anything happening, but I was getting little bits, stuff that would stick in my head. Well, all that's going on, and then all this happens, I'm at the probably the lowest I've ever felt in my life. I was in a garage at my partner's house, and I'd always had this feeling when I was nine, when I'm getting arrested, getting in trouble and drinking. My mom would come to me with fear, you know, hey, what are you doing? And I would just look at her and tell her, everything's going to be all right. This is all just phases. I mean, I'll just, one day the beer will be gone, this will be gone. So I was sitting in that garage by myself, showering out of the out of the hot water straight off the tap. I thought I was, you know, cooking my meals out of that, living in the guy's garage. But I didn't feel like everything was going to be all right. Something came on me where I was like, shit ain't going to be all right. I was getting up in age, I hear, and I was a little nervous. So I went and checked in at the rescue mission here in town. I was there, humbly there, for 2 months until I had an altercation in the kitchen. My anger and disappointment my whole life of myself has caused me to do... I've been volatile, straight up. I mean, just a pressure case. It could go from happy to being a fucking idiot in 2 seconds less. So that happens. I'm back out on the streets. I'm back in that pity party. My life sucks. The whole world's come against me. I take some time away. I'm going to go back to Oklahoma. So my parents have moved back to Oklahoma. My dad's up in age. I'm going to go back there and get clean, get sober, and make a new life. And then just forget the kids. Forget the kids. Forget everything here. So I'm there. I'm not there but 3 months. I already got a job. I get my own place. Looking back over it, that was the first time I ever had my own place. And I was 38 or something like that. I always had roommates, always lived in somebody's garage, converted it, you know. It was all going good. And then I ran into the redhead. And I'm a sucker for redheads. And she happened to, it's a small hick town, everybody knows everybody. Well, she happened to be the one runner in the whole town. And so it was a great relationship. And that went on. Lost my job, not because of me. I gave that guy 100%, but I imagine I had my part in that as well. So lose the job, end up going back, coming back to California, come back into the pity party. Well, my dad passes away, and so I go back, take care of all the things we're supposed to take care of, and then I could see. My mom starts drinking like the first night I'm there. And I've always thought my mom had issues of being alone because I could see, because I knew I have issues of being alone. So I figure it's best for me to just go back to California. I come back to California. They come up here to spread some ashes at the property. And I was with my mom for like 2 minutes, and that was a minute and a half too long. So we started arguing, and she says something about I can't go up to the property to do the ashes, so every bit of idiotness comes out of me. And ends up, by the whole thing when it's done, is I've thrown a rock at my mom's car because I'm mad at her like a child, and my daughter was in the back seat. So the glass breaks all over my daughter. And and that right there was it sucked, you know what I mean? So my daughter don't want to be no part of my life. And that's pretty much where I'm at right now. Right now I'm trying to do the unification with my daughter. I'm trying to get back with her. It was all right for my old man to see me a washout here, but for him to see me from heaven, this really chokes me up. So something happened. I got the 21 little days. They put me in mental drug court. And I took some medication. I'm always better when I'm on my medication. And I got out 21 days. So I get out. I go into the shelter. And I put up my little hoop. That's all I want. All I care about is just me. Anything around me. My bunkie had the stinkiest feet I ever smelled in my life. And it was none of my business. I didn't care. Anything that went on, the shelter had, you know, all the beauties of the shelter. But I didn't let any of it bother me. I'm on a mission. That's all I'm thinking is I'm on a mission. This is what I got to do right now. I'm not working. I'm not caring about work. I don't want no part of work. I've always had an answer every time I came out. I need to get a job. I need to do this. I need to do that. And this time, all I needed to do was what everybody had told me all the years prior. Sit down, shut up, go to meetings, and do the footwork for recovery, and the rest of the shit will come. I took a chance, and I said, okay, that's all I'm going to do. For 4 months, I went to the shelter. I went to 3 meetings a day. I went and found therapy from a therapist so I could discuss all the stuff going on in me. I got a friend of mine that comes to the program. I called him. Like, the third day, I was ready to cook. I was done, you know, because too much pressure for me. I mean, I had to, you know, think. I had to stick to my little plan, and I don't know how to deal with my emotions. I don't know how to deal with any feelings. When anything happens, I like to cut and run. I like to break things and go. And third day, I just said, pick the phone up. And I picked up the phone. I called the dude. I said, man, the wind's blowing. I don't know what to do. He walked me through it. I called him back 2 hours later. This is going on. The wind's still blowing. He walked me through it. About the third time I called him, I says, well, you know what this means? You're my sponsor. And he politely tried to back out of it. And I politely told him I would not allow that because I couldn't even possibly think of it. And so he took on the responsibility of accepting all my calls. He still to this day accepts my calls. And I call him all the time. I work with this gentleman, Gregory, on my steps, which he made it less stressful for me. And I feel, I got a lot of respect for that gentleman. And I use those two people, each one for a different characteristic. He's got a life that I don't want to disturb too much. The other guy's got a life I just don't really care if I disturb too much. And then there's some other people in here that I listen to because I see that they've done it. I've been doing in and out so long that I've had great sponsors. Malcolm, this older cat that was here, that dude was an unbelievable sponsor. I've seen Daryl when he came in. I've seen so many different people when they came in, and they've got 20-something years. So I just came in and shut up and listened to them. What time does this end? 8?
Sure.
And I came in with the idea that I don't know shit and that no woman's my answer. That's the big one. No woman's my answer because I like to get in a relationship, forget all about myself, and then that way I can divert everything to them, get out there on the wire and forget everything. So those were my two mantras, and then I had another one that says I'm not uniquely different, because that right there had kept me out for so many years. It was just, but I'm different. I may be unique and different, but I am not uniquely different. And so I don't know if it's up in age or just the time or if it's just God's time, because all those other times I wanted it. I really wanted it. I just didn't know how about to get it, and I couldn't hear it to hear it. And so as of yesterday, I finished my 12 steps, worked through them. I didn't go ahead and kill some more time. Keep clapping, it'll kill more time. Thanks. So I've worked the steps before, and somebody had asked me a question yesterday when I said I had finished them. They'd asked me a question, and I was thinking about the question they asked me was, what'd you feel? And I didn't really feel anything, and I thought, well, maybe because I'm in line with what I'm supposed to be doing. Maybe that's why. Because before, the first time I did a 4-step, it was like jumping a whole dump load of rock. I was like, wow. I had a guilt pack for years that I carried all my life. It was, I couldn't go forward because I was too busy living in the past. And when I was incarcerated this last time, I'm going to kind of backtrack for a second here. I was reading this book, and it was nothing spiritual, nothing. It was just a normal book. And I don't know the difference between fiction and nonfiction. Laugh all you want. But I always lose track of which one's which. But it said how lonely it must be to live in the present. Oh no, to live in the past or the future. And it was just like, wow, dude, that's what I did. I spent my whole life worrying about what was going to happen or what I did. And so I use these little things or the things that are all clicking. So back to the question, I says, so I answer, I said, I must be in line. So that's why I didn't feel anything. So I leave and go that night, and like no normal people with obsessive thoughts, all night long I'm thinking about it. And I thought, how egotistical that is of me to say that I'm in line with all, everything that's supposed to be. And I still haven't decided if that is egotistical. I'm still debating it. I'm still going through it. I feel what I'm doing is proper and right. I still resent. I still judge. I still do everything. But I have a different attitude about it for some reason. Things are just a tad bit different. Like, I don't hold it. I've heard it before. I don't hold the resentment for as long. Well, I actually remember now to pray for the person that I resent. And it relieves the responsibility of me having to do anything because I love the easy way out. I mean, I've loved the easy way out. The rest, okay, the rest of it's probably going to be dribble. But I'm doing the footwork in the mornings. I get up. I read the Bible, read the big book, read my 12 and 12. I journal. I do short prayers about the obsession to be removed. I do the third step prayer in my head. And then I pretty much go on my day. In every situation, I try to do a little better. I try to find a spot that's not in the middle of everybody because I like to get caught up in talking. I do everything differently. I'm doing everything differently. I'm in the halfway house over at the Good Sam. And you guys are all staring at me. I'm grateful. I'm grateful. I'm glad things are changing. And I don't believe anything I'm doing is the results of it. I believe it's just the right time for the little bit of footwork that I'm doing, because I'm only doing a quarter of what it used to take me to get my drink on out there is what I'm doing to my recovery. And that's all I really got.
Yeah. Let's thank Frank again. Wow. Well, that's it for me. Thank you, sir, for letting me be a part of your recovery. And I'll turn it over to...